I think it represents the beginning of what can be a spiritual revival if we decide to do something with it. I think what's happened is the court has not made significant changes. They've opened significant doors. And if we don't walk through those doors and take advantage of this, it will mean nothing in the nation. Right now, their decisions, and let's just give you an example. And by the way, while these are great, 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 great victories, they're only the beginning of what needs to happen. And now let's just take Coach Kennedy's decision, the case that came out of Washington where you had the Christian coach who would kneel and offer silent prayer at the end of football games, and the court said he can definitely do that. What's going to happen is you're going to have about 10,000 coaches this fall that are going to start praying in football games. And you're going to have about 10,000 local lawsuits to start because school boards are going to say, now, wait, you can't do that. And every secular group in America is going to be out there saying, you can't do that. That's not what the court said. And so even though the court has opened the door, it's going to have to be fought at every single local community. We've already seen this with the Dobbs decision. Roe v. Wade is now repealed, which means from the federal perspective, they're not going to get involved in abortion, but that doesn't end abortion. So you had 27 states that were prepared to go pro-life if Roe v. Wade ever ended, and a lot of those states had what were called trigger laws, which said if Roe v. Wade gets overturned, this will trigger our anti-abortion laws going into effect in the state. And so Texas had a trigger law, and Louisiana had a trigger law, and all these states had a trigger law, Florida, and all those states have now been in court because the state judges are saying, no, wait a minute, you can't end abortion here in Florida or Texas or Louisiana or wherever. So the court said that it goes back to the states, but now the states are fighting over whether they're going to end this or not, and don't think that Planned Parenthood is going to fold up their tent and go home because they lost that case. They're going to pick up their tent and move right in the middle of every state they can and start putting lots of money into state legislative races. I mean, even though the Dobbs decision came out of Mississippi, guarantee you, Planned Parenthood is going into Mississippi to set up and start lobbying legislators and start working the people and start running ads to convince people that you don't want this policy. So what the court did was let us walk through a door. Now, if we're not willing to take the ground, if we're not willing to engage the culture, if we're not willing to stand and fight for the rights that we have, if we're not willing to say, you know, as a coach, I don't care if they sue me or not, here's what I'm going to do. If we don't do that, then we're not going to take the ground back. So I think that this is a great opportunity. And by the way, in addition to the cases you mentioned, the court this year at the Supreme Court, we won 5 religious liberty cases. We usually don't win 5 cases in 20 years at the court. We won 5 this year at the court. And even that the decision on the school choice in Maine, I was talking to the attorney who argued that, and he said this is so much bigger than people understand because it now means that any government service of any kind that is offered in a state cannot be excluded from religious folks. So even adoption, if you've got adoption service in your state, you can no longer say, well, you're a religious adoption agency. We're not going to take you. This opens the door not just for education, but for every single service that's offered anywhere in the nation. If the government offers that service and makes it available to everybody, they can no longer exclude religious folks out of it. So it not only changes education, it changes social services across the nation, which is a huge thing if we'll walk through the door and fight for this stuff.
Yeah, and that fascinates me, David, because I think there was a lesson to be learned, and we saw it in Virginia last year. Parents found out what their kids were being taught in school, and they just didn't go to school board meetings to complain. They started to run for office, and I think we've been seeing this across the country in various jurisdictions where Christians are saying, wow, I found out what the left has been doing over the last 20 or 30 years, and the way to change this, I've not only got to complain about but what's going on, I have to do something about it, and people start to run for office.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's always been an assumption that, yeah, Washington, D.C., those guys are all a bunch of corrupt crooks up there, but not my town. My town's pretty good, unless you live in L.A. or some big city, but even rural America, you know, rural America and suburban America, we kind of said, yeah, but that's the way they are as a national government. That's not where it is where we are. And then parents start saying, whoa, what do you mean my kid is transitioning once they get to school? That there's a transitioning closet? And you've been telling my kid that she's a different sex than what she is, and you're not letting me know? And wait a minute, what kind of books do you have in the library there? I thought we were teaching math and science and physics, and now we're teaching queer studies. And so parents are saying, what? And it's even in the rural schools. And, you know, while I know we've got a lot of good public school teachers that are solid Christians, the system is definitely broken. And the system is really bad, and very few teachers can make an effect in the system. And so this is coming from top down in so many states. You had this year states like in Minnesota, where for the next 10 years, they have said, we're not going to teach. For the next 10 years, we're not going to teach the American Revolution or the Civil War or World War One or World War Two or the Holocaust. That all goes out for the next 10 years. And people go, well, then what are you teaching in history? Well, we're teaching CRT and we're teaching the 1619 Project. But that's bad history. Yeah, but it's good philosophy. And so what's happened is this has all come to a school near every one of us. And what we're seeing is a massive, massive change. Now, as you mentioned, Fairfax and Loudoun County, this thing really blew up where a guy had his daughter raped and he was never told about it. And it was by a kid posing transgender or claiming to be transgender. So all this has gone on. And so parents have arisen. We were engaged this last election with 1,500 churches in Colorado. And in 1,500 churches in Colorado, they took dozens of school boards. They took just countless scores of seats. Matter of fact, the Denver school board was taken by conservatives. Four of the school boards in Colorado Springs, now in the hands of conservatives, completely flipped in the election. If you go to Dallas, which is not a small city, 6 weeks ago had the elections in Dallas, and there were 15 school board seats open in Dallas, and we got all 15 of them. 51 churches got together and said, you know, we can do better than this. And those 51 churches not only recruited candidates and recruited sound candidates that are very competent, qualified, they also, all 51 churches, put a slide up before the election and said, hey, you know, there's an election here in the city this Tuesday, and don't know who you're voting for, but if you're looking for somebody that's got solid values, here's 15 people that are really good. And those 15 folks all won by 60-40 margins, and some of them won by 70-30 margins. The same, a bunch of churches got together in Houston. Houston, 2.3 million people in Houston, and Christians now have a school board in Houston. They won the seats in Houston. The same in Boise, the same in Wichita, and these are liberal cities I'm talking about. These are not the conservative bastions. These are, you know, Dallas and Houston, things like that, Denver. These are liberal cities, and we're seeing this across the nation as not only just citizens, but even churches are becoming active and saying, you know what, this is our community. These are our kids. We have to get involved and do something different. It's been just tremendous to see.
Yet we still have some pastors who are reluctant. They say, well, I don't want to deal with politics from the pulpit. But when you talk about abortion, when you talk about the homosexual agenda, those are all spiritual issues that need to be dealt with from the pulpit. And I always find it difficult. Why, Pastor, are you having difficulty saying you don't want to talk about politics? These are spiritual issues.
Well, I'm going to be real blunt on something, and it may get me in trouble, but I've been in trouble before, so I'm going to be real blunt on it. I speak to 15,000 pastors a year, and so I'll do dozens and dozens of pastors' conferences. Now, I'll often say, hey, pastors, as you look back over the last 30 years, what are some of the real things that have attacked our families and attacked our culture? What are the things that we've seen? Oh, the transgender movement, the LGBTQ plus movement, the movement of secularism, the movement, and they'll go through all these things that have attacked our families and undermined them. I said, okay, I want you to show me the sermons you've preached on all the topics you just mentioned, because Jesus says that there's a difference between a shepherd and a hireling. A shepherd sees the danger coming at the flock and throws himself in front of the flock and confronts the danger. A hireling sees the danger and turns and doesn't confront it. So I want you to show me where you've confronted secularism or television or entertainment or movies or Disney. Show me where you've confronted that, because that's what a shepherd does. A hireling ignores those things and doesn't want to get involved. And I think we've had way too many hirelings. If you judge a tree by its fruits, as Jesus told us to do, there's a real shortage of that. And working with George Barna, we find that only 2.8% of America's pastors will confront those kind of issues. Only 2.8%. Now, we have 384,000 churches and senior pastors in America, and the result of that has been what we saw just in the last couple of days. The new polling is out that shows that only 20% of Americans believe the Word of God is literally the Word of God, that is actually true. We have a higher percentage who do not believe the Word of God is true than we have that believe is true. And this year, the American Bible Society came out with this annual State of the Bible report and shows that 26 million Americans stopped reading the Bible last year. So I kind of look at it, and using some COVID analogy, you know, a vaccination is something where you inject a little bit of something into someone that gives them an immunity against that. So whether it's smallpox or measles or whatever, or COVID, you inject a little bit of the disease into that person that gives them immunity. I think churches have for a long time injected just a little bit of religion into people, which makes them immune to true religion, and they're not getting infected with really the Bible and biblical views, because we're just kind of religious on the surface, and 2.8% of pastors actually address what's going in the culture. And so I think this is an opportunity, and I think we're seeing it, that I think the church is starting to awaken, but we have really let this thing slide. I never thought I would see so many churches get involved in local areas and communities, but now they're seeing that, you know, if I'm going to be a shepherd, I got to confront the danger, and right now that's in my local schools, and I've got to change that. And so those results I was giving you are all across the nation. We're seeing them in Jersey, we're seeing them in Virginia, we're seeing them in Florida. I go state after state. It's just phenomenal to see local church pastors getting involved in local issues, and churches and Christians starting to be leaders again. It's really good.
And we shouldn't be surprised then when George Barna does research on this, and we get it consistently, that our young people brought up in our churches are wandering away from the faith. Is it because these kinds of issues are not being dealt with the way they should be from the pulpit?
You know, great question. And I can go back and answer some of that with polling, and just to confirm what you said. If you go with Gen X, Gen Y, Gen Z, you got the baby boomers, then Gen X, Gen Y, Gen Z. It's interesting that with Gen X, 1.6% of the Gen X generation, and that's going to be those that are over 40 kind of stuff, those in 40s, 50s, 60s, only 1.6% of them identify as LGBTQ. When you come to the Gen Y generation, which is millennials, which is maybe 42 down to 21 or so, that generation, 30% identifies LGBTQ. And when you come down to the Gen Z generation, which is the kids now up to maybe 19, 20, 21, it's 39% that identifies LGBTQ. So you've seen this tremendous increase in issues like that. If you go back to Gen X, 89% of Gen X people believe in God. When you come to millennials, it's only 33% that believe in God. So we're seeing this massive, massive shift in the culture. And it's interesting that if you go back to the year 2000, 85% of Americans professed to be Christians in the year 2000. In the year 2020, 20 years later, only 65% of Americans professed to be Christian. Now, that's a 20-point drop in 20 years. And polling those who left church, no longer go to church, say, I'm out of religion, polling them and saying, why did you leave? Two out of three say, because church has no relevancy for what I face in daily life. This is just something old, and you know, it's a devotional here or there and makes me feel good about something, but it doesn't help me with what I face in daily life, at school, at work, in politics, anything else. And that lack of relevancy is what's identified, and again, with 2.8% of the pastors addressing things in the culture, that's what many people are saying, this doesn't feed me at all. And if I'm going to have an hour to waste on Sunday morning, I'd rather watch a football game than I would go to church, because I'm getting nothing out of it. And so that's where the church is going to have to refocus itself, and that means our seminaries are going to have to start teaching differently. We're going to have to get back to reading the Bible. Another Barna poll came out this year where that about 67% of pastors do not have a biblical worldview. So the people who are leading these things really don't even know how the Bible applies to so many aspects of life. And when we get back to that point, we're going to see the genuine revival. Now, I think the door is open for revival. I think we're starting to see it. I think the fact that we're seeing it at local school boards and areas like that, I think this is all super good news for America. but don't think that a revival is without work. I mean, look at what Charles Finney had to do in a revival. Look at what Woodfill had to do in a revival. That is the hardest work of their life, and it killed them to do what they did, but it changed the nation. So revivals are not easy and fun. There's a lot of hard work there, but that is what will change the nation.
All right, David Barton, Wall Builders. What I hear from you, we can celebrate these court decisions, but it's also time to get busy. Great to talk to you, sir.